Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to part two of the 2 to T podcast. My name is Jordan Michael Colson, joined, of course, by our panel of experts, the Great Life Golf CEO and President, John Matthew Brown, and, not to be outdone, they called him Mr. PGA Show. His name is Bryce Boysen, and boy, did he hold down the helm at the PGA Show last week in Orlando with Golf Back as Bryce Boysen. Round of applause, Bryce. You stood on your feet for hours and hours on end, entertaining the masses at the PGA Show. Welcome back to part two. Not to be outdone by Hot Shots part two. If we can be anything close to that good, guys, we're going to have a great episode. John, Bryce, welcome back.
Great to be back, Jordan.
Yep.
He was on his feet a lot, wasn't he?
He was. Bryce, how do you let's start off hot and heavy with the tee up. Let's talk about the PGA Show. We told people we were going to be there. We were there. John was moving and shaking. Bryce, you were shaking. I don't know if you were moving because you were at the booth pretty much the entire time. But what was that like for you, Bryce, to be there day in and day out and spreading the good word that is Golf Back?
Yeah, the days were long, but they went by fast, if that makes sense. It was very busy, very exciting, had lots of very good conversations. So yeah, overall it was just a great week, but those days are certainly long to be on your feet the whole time, but totally rewarding and worth it at the end of the day.
Excellent booth placement.
It was. Our booth was right on the aisle. Thought we got good traffic, especially the first 2 days. People were pumped. It was packed. It was really good to see.
You know my favorite moment?
What was that, John?
I was watching you give a tutorial to somebody, and three Golf Now guys came up right behind you to check it out. I was thinking, come on in, fellas.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's a pretty neat tool.
So, John, what was it like for you? I was able to attend one of your seminars, and I found it enlightening. Of course, I had heard a lot of that before, but it's always good to see it in practice, see it with the slides, with Brent Miller there giving the visuals. A lot of people there, a lot of people came up shaking your hand, applauding what you're doing. What was the show like for you, and especially the seminar where you get to get a little bit more up close and personal with some of the people?
It's the first time at the PGA Show that we've had a booth, which I really enjoyed because, you know, it was basically like our hub of activity for the week. So it was nice to come back to the booth, see the vibrancy around the new launch of the Grow product for Golf Back. The educational opportunity that Brent and I did, you know, that's co-sanctioned between the PGA and the NGCOA while they're doing their golf business conference. Great opportunity to talk about what we're doing inside Golf Back and Great Life. There was probably about 120 people that attended that event. A lot of great conversations afterwards. And, you know, the PGA Show is all about, you know, seeing the latest, greatest products, but also networking. So, you know, I had the opportunity to have drinks with David Pillsbury from Invited, played golf with Michael Sharp over at Corsco, had this meeting with Tom Everett of Landscapes Unlimited. And those types of conversations are just invaluable in our space. So, I mean, overall, it was a fantastic week, and I love doing it. I spend a week down there every week. You know, I try to keep my travel schedule to 3 or 4 days max just because of the fact that I have three kids at home and a wife and a business, and anytime I'm away from the office, things pile up. But that is a week. I spend the entire week there, and I get value every day I'm there.
Now, Bryce, other than, of course, Golf Back, which, of course, is just riveting technology, did you get a chance to peruse the floor at all? Did you see anything that you were excited about? Any products, any new tech, any services? Or were you just at the booth literally the entire time, just straight killing it?
I was at the booth pretty much the entire time. I did just kind of walk in and out, saw, you know, a lot of different consumer products. Seems like there's a lot of golf cart companies coming to market, and more so, I think, personal golf cars than, you know, fleet golf cars like we're used to in our business with Great Life. But, you know, I think just like looking at the different golf cars that were available, technology certainly moving with things like golf cars as well, which was kind of interesting to see.
John's like, you damn well better be at that booth the whole time. But John, of course, you, aside from everything that you had to do, did you see anything that really excited you or things that you weren't aware of? Or do you pretty much have your finger on the exact pulse of the industry at all times?
Well, it's evident that all the traffic to golf simulators and range technologies is taking the show by storm, too. I mean, there was more simulator bays than I've ever seen. There's putting technology out there. I mean, I actually saw the idea and the build moving into a simulator where you actually move and you actually physically putt on a putting simulator as well. So there's some unique technology down the road coming there, and I think that has everything to do with the traffic. You know, the equipment technology, I feel like equipment, you know, it always evolves every year, but it's got to be getting harder and harder for them to evolve the equipment. But with the new golf balls rules that are coming out, you know, we'll see what happens with equipment. The PGA Show used to be all apparel and equipment, but there's so much more to it now, and definitely the personal golf carts. I mean, there were golf carts in there that looked like monster trucks, And there were paddleball courts, you know, which is a part of country clubs, and a lot of different unique areas. The business is definitely evolving past just obviously merchandise and apparel.
John, I think you play paddleball at the beach, and then you're looking for pickleball there.
Oh shoot.
I was going to correct him, but I value my employment.
So, pickleball.
We'll talk about pickleball. Because it's coming, people. Pickleball's on the rise. And it's not just for 80-year-olds anymore. Did either of you get a chance to at least walk by the Top Tracer display or booth, or booths for lack thereof?
I did not.
I walked past. Yeah, they had basically like a range in the middle of the floor. You know, they always have the range on the far end of the PGA Show, but this was sitting in the middle of the floor. You know, first time I think I've seen it right in the middle of the floor like that. But yeah, I definitely saw it.
I would have no frame of reference to know where it's been in the past, but I do know that it felt, when in walking by that, it felt like the future of golf, that's not the only component, but it felt like the future of golf is literally right in front of me, and I'm happy that we have that technology at Orange Lake, but it just felt like that's continuing to grow and become such a relevant thing, which you alluded to earlier.
Range technology and simulator technology, you know, things like obviously we have behind us the TrackMan Bay here, you know, Top Tracer outdoor ranges, those products are going to be bolt-ons for every golf course in America, and it's going to be a necessity. You're going to need to have it in 5 or 10 years, you know.
Yep.
If I was DJ Khaled, I would team up with TrackMan and make that like a headphone brand that coincides with the simulator. Just saying.
That might be a pretty good idea, too.
That's not a bad idea.
Just saying. We said it here first on the To The Tee podcast. Well, the PGA Show was definitely fun. Appreciate both you guys and, of course, Brent and Jason and Lee and the entire Golf Back and Great Life Golf team for letting me be a part of it. It was definitely a lot to take in, but it was really cool. Also great to meet old TJ as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. Todd Jordan, our director of support at Golf Back, was in the booth for a couple days. You know, good to see him and nice to see him interact with some of our customers that he works with on a daily basis as well.
One thing about the PGA Show is you always bump into some famous people or golfers. Did you see anybody on the floor?
I saw Justin Leonard.
Justin Leonard, who won the British Open, is 25 years old.
1997?
96? Or 7, right in there. Yeah. Royal Troon, I'll never forget it. Yeah. He was my favorite golfer for a period of time, mostly because he was short and didn't hit it far, which, you know, resonated with me. But he probably gave the greatest British Open speech ever, so it was nice to see Justin Leonard on the floor. See anybody else?
I did not.
So I walked around the corner at the Capitol Grill, and Urban Meyer was sitting right in front of me. You know, he had his legs crossed, exactly as you'd expect. Very Joe Cool.
And speaking of football legends, I was able to hobnob a bit with Vinny Testaverde. So
yeah, you were. You got a nice shot with Vinny. It's always cool to see, you know, who gets attracted to the show. And I saw Matt Fitzpatrick was at the show, and just it's always neat. Lee Trevino.
The coolest person I saw was a guy named Jeff Ma. You know who that is?
Jeff Ma.
Jeff Ma. Yep.
I do know who that is.
Yes.
I love this story.
So Jeff has a sports betting podcast that I listen to frequently.
Yeah.
He's definitely an analytics kind of data nerd, I would say. And he's, you know, his background obviously is the movie 21 and the book Bringing Down the House. He was part of that MIT blackjack team that was counting cards back in the late 80s and early 90s in Las Vegas. So
I could see why he'd be your favorite.
Yeah.
I know why.
Did you get a chance to talk to him?
Just the couple statements, but it was pretty quick.
Yeah, Bryce kept his attention for 10 seconds. Jeff was on.
What's the protocol on that? Coming from the world I come from I've worked with and met some celebrities in the film industry and some other things like that, but what's the protocol at a place like that? If you see someone you admire at a PGA event or at a golf event, is it like anything else? If it's a time and place and they're not super busy, you can approach them. And there's also, there's some guys that I just admire so much, and women that I'm like, all right, I'm doing it. I'll be that guy. I don't care. But is it in, is it at faux pas? Is it okay? What's it like in the golf world when you're going to approach someone you like?
I think especially at the PGA show, it's fine. I mean, they're I think they're there for a reason too, whether it's, you know, they're sponsored by a brand that's being represented there. They're there to talk to people, right, and talk to fans. And at the end of the day, we're all fans of golf, and so I think definitely in that environment, you know, it's acceptable.
I, of course, always play it cool.
Yeah.
That's not surprising.
I watch.
I know how Jordan plays it, though. Last year at the PGA Championship, Jordan and I were watching DJ. Right behind us, about 10 feet away, Paulina was leaning on a tree. And Jordan goes, oh, there's Paulina. I said, go say hi. But he didn't. We just played it cool.
Yeah. She was a little bit more intimidating than Vinny Testaverde was. But I tell you what, I walked right up to Mr. Testaverde, looked him in his eyes, threw his eyes into his soul, and I said, you're number 16 all time on the passing yards list. He's like, yeah. And I was like, the real number 16 is on my podcast. Number 16 in Golfing Magazine, the most powerful in golf. Get it through your head. He said, what the hell are you talking about?
Is that
about?
Even true? Is Vinny Testaverde even 16? If he is, that'd be incredible.
I think he wore 16 too, didn't he? Wasn't his number 16?
He probably did on one of the teams he was on, because he was on quite a few.
All right, yeah. We're going to have to stat check that one.
He was 16 at one time, because Joe Flacco...
And you didn't look into his eyes. You were looking straight up in the air.
He's yeah, a big no, guy. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that gives you some perspective. All right, welcome back to the Vinny Testaverde Appreciation Hour. Let's move on. Let's move on to the tee-up segment. And of course, guys, we'd be remiss not to talk about a young man by the name of Nick Dunlap with some incredible accomplishments in recent memory and not to be outdone. Nick Dunlap, 20 years old, University of Alabama sophomore, pulled off a sensational victory at the American Express in California to become the first amateur to triumph at a PGA Tour event since 1991 and the youngest amateur to win on tour since 1910. So it's been quite some time. Nick had turned pro on January 24th and has earned a PGA Tour card through the 2026 season. So he's going to qualify for 7 of the 8 signature events this year, as well as the Players' Championship in March. And he also qualified for 3 of 4 majors, the Masters, the PGA Championship, and the US Open. So guys, there's lots of angles to take on young Mr. Dunlap. The first one that I'm going to say as a casual observer, is it time for me to heap an unrealistic plethora of expectations onto Mr. Dunlap and assume that he's the next Tiger Woods and I should hitch everything to that wagon?
I mean, obviously, to say that he's the next Tiger Woods is or going to be the next Tiger Woods is quite a lot of weight to put on the young man. I would say it's reasonable to think that he is going to be, you know, a future top 10 player in the world, for sure. You know, winning on tour as an amateur, like you said, hasn't been done since 1910. However, Phil Mickelson did do it. I think the PGA Tour just maybe scrapped him from the record book. So that's kind of just an interesting tidbit there. But yeah, incredibly impressive. 29 under PGA West definitely was not the same golf course I played when we were there, because I certainly did not see that number out there. Mm-hmm.
29 under is an incredible number out there. I mean, it's not an easy golf course. Of course, they all shot low out there. So you give them a little bit of sun, some good weather, no wind, and these guys are just obviously elite players. They get the ball in the hole. Probably most impressive is Nick Dunlap's won the U.S. Junior Amateur, the U.S. Amateur, and now a PGA Tour event as an amateur. I'm pretty sure no one's done that, not even Tiger himself. He's the first.
He is the first.
So, I mean, that's kind of incredible territory to be in, right? Kind of his swing kind of reminds me of another guy who won as an amateur, Scott Verplank. Am I outdating myself with you, Bryce?
You are. I do know Scott Verplank. I did not know that he won as an amateur.
Yeah, 1985 he won as an amateur. Pretty sure we might need to spot check that. I'm pretty sure he did. But Nick's got I don't know, his move kind of reminds me of Scott Verplank's. But what an incredible win. What guts to knock in that 6-footer in the last hole. He kind of hit an iffy iron shot in there. Got lucky. Kind of kicked down into a reasonable chip. But just stone cold knocked that 6-footer in for history, right? The first to do that. We may never see that again. Now, obviously, we're taping this podcast the Friday of the week at Pebble Beach. He played yesterday. Not quite as good yesterday. Maybe coming off a high a little bit. But, you know, hopefully he doesn't move into, you know, what Justin Rose experienced. If you remember, Justin Rose, he finished fourth in the British Open, turned pro, missed 21 cuts on the European Tour, something like that, right out of the gate. Yeah. So hopefully he doesn't see that at all, but I'm pulling for him. What an incredible win.
It was, yeah, it was incredible. Obviously, Rose kind of turned it around there and has had a pretty good career, I would say.
Defending champion, you know, from Pebble Beach a year ago, major winners, got gold medal. Yeah, he's doing all right.
He's doing okay.
I was worried that I wouldn't be able to spell Verplank correctly. I thought it might just be a strange spelling, but I did spell it right, and it looks like he won the 1985 Western Open as an amateur. So,
okay.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you very much. Golf trivia. We're doing golf
Jordan
trivia.
Jordan Scott Verplank, was he a teammate of Justin Leonard at Texas?
You're asking way too much right now.
No. Scott Verplank went to Oklahoma State. Is that right, Jordan?
I knew it was somewhere in that region.
Scott Verplank, Oklahoma State. He attended.
I had the conference right.
Yeah.
He was part of the NCAA championship team in 1983.
Yeah.
Okay.
So some notable teammates: Tommy Moore, Willie Wood, and Andy Dillard.
Willie Wood. Okay.
Huge Andy Dillard fan base on the 2 to T podcast.
All right. Outside of losing most of the audience here, right?
There's plenty of live news and notes to go around. Speaking of which, Tyrell Hatton will be quitting the PGA Tour to the tune of about $63 million to join his old buddy, John Rahm. With this happening, guys, and some of the other names that have left for greener pastures, and I mean that in every sense of the term, do we see a domino effect coming? Are there going to be more big names that are going to be making the switch? And what does that mean for the PGA and for LIV, ultimately?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what's been announced this week with the PGA Tour and the investment that they've gotten from the Strategic Sports Group, I think that's going to give the players a sense of the direction that the tour is moving in, and I think that will thwart some people from going to LIV. However, and I also think if the, you know, PIF gets a deal done with the tour, obviously that would, and they figure out a way to kind of join forces, I think that would be the best case for all golf fans everywhere. But yeah, I think the tour deal will bring some stability, and we will see players staying with the tour.
The announcement about the investment into the tour is a different point in golf. Obviously a point Tiger's excited about communicating about it, but I mean, they're gonna cut the players into the equity position of that tour moving forward into that business venture. So it'll be interesting to see what will stave off sort of players' desire to potentially leave. I mean, when you say, Hatton, you know, left for the LIV, I mean, he made a business decision. He got $63 million. He's going to play half as many events. He gets to play with his buddy, John Rahm, you know, an incredible player, obviously. So they're going to be right up there in the team competition. So you can't begrudge him. And ironically, if you think about it, do we get to this point with the PGA Tour if Phil doesn't do what he does 2.5 years ago? The answer is no, you don't, right?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not, right? Yeah. So there's this weird kind of undertone, which everybody hated Phil for what he did, but maybe they should be thanking Phil for what he did. And, you know, as a golf fan and a consumer of golf products, you know, on Sundays now, we're going to have two events, right? There's the event this weekend. There's an event in Mexico, the LIV event, which you got great players like, obviously, John Rahm, new exciting player, Brooks Koepka, some deep Dustin Johnson, some of the best players in the world playing, right? And then you got Pebble Beach. That field's unbelievable. That venue's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What are we going to watch? I'll probably watch the tournament that has the most drama at the end. Who's going to win, right?
Yep.
And now we got two options. So I think we're in a good place.
One of the biggest names who has not jumped over to LIV yet is Rory McIlroy, of course, and he is now saying that he would welcome LIV players back with open arms, and he thinks there should be no penalties. So, guys, is this a walk back from his once acerbic and venomous talk about how he wanted really nothing to do with them and they should be ashamed of themselves, for lack of better terms?
You know, I think it is a walk back, but I almost credit Rory. I think at the end of the day, Rory has realized that he wants to play against the best golfers in the world, and LIV is not going away. And in order for that to happen, you know, they have to figure out a way for them all to be in the same field. So he doesn't want the game of golf to be segmented for the fan. And I think, as a fan myself, I appreciate that. So why, yes, it is a bit of a walk back, and certainly he's flip-flopped a bit during the process, I appreciate his perspective for sure.
Flip-flopped, I'm going to say he's had more information at his fingertips, right? And it's changed his opinion. And, you know, I think like John Rahm and Hatton going to the LIV event, like those are his Ryder Cup buddies. He was in the trenches with them, right? It's one thing when Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter and Graham McDowell and some of these guys that were on the team and in the trenches with them 10, 15 years ago. It's another thing when you got guys in their prime. John Rahm, obviously one of the best players in the world. So I think he's taking a look at the landscape and he's realizing that, you know, it's not going away. It is changing. Perhaps maybe what the PGA was thinking about the LIV impact initially was a little bit, maybe their position was a little stronger than it actually was, right? Yeah. And so I give them credit for absorbing the information, but it's a complete walk back if you just look from 24 months ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, gentlemen, the AT&T Pro-Am tees up this week at the hallowed ground of Pebble Beach. Now, John and Bryce, you guys have some unique insight both about Pro-Ams themselves, but also how special Pebble Beach is. And if you've ever been in a locker room at a gym, and there's usually some older guys there that are practicing their swings at arbitrary times, and they're like, oh, you know, what I wouldn't do to play Pebble one more time. That's the one you always hear. Even if you're a casual golf fan, you know what Pebble Beach is. Is it, first and foremost, before we get started on the Pro-Am, is it as special as they say? Is it all that it's cracked up to be?
I've never played Pebble. I've been to Pebble. It looks very special. The drive-in is unlike anything I've ever seen. And from what I could see, it looks amazing, but I've never played it.
The history of the property is, you know, unbelievable. When you're on the grounds, you feel that. There's some great scenery and shots. I do enjoy the golf course. I would say I have a couple other golf experiences that I would put above it overall, but it's just a special place and always will be in professional golf. You're actually looking at number 7 right now on the simulator here in the back of the screen, which yesterday Tony Finau was hitting drivers in the Wednesday Pro-Am on a 107-yard hole. I mean, you can't get that too often at some other properties.
No, that's a 13-club win.
That's right, a 13-club win,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's going to chip half a lob wedge tomorrow.
That's right. Amazing.
Yeah.
John, Bryce informed me that you have a pretty hallowed history playing in some Pro-Ams. So what is the vibe like when you're going? Now, obviously, I don't think Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers were the ones you were playing. You know, not that it's not intimidating. What is the vibe like? Or is it exciting? Is it intimidating? Is it all a cornucopia of emotion?
Totally depends on the player you're playing with. You know, you kind of feed off who you get paired with. The best person that I've ever been paired with from a personality standpoint was Justin Rose, who actually won the event a year ago. He was great and a lot of fun. And it's nice to see those guys up close and personal and playing and just get an appreciation for how good they are. So obviously the Pro-Am's a big piece of this tournament. I thought it was nice last year. Keith Mitchell called out Aaron Rodgers, thought his handicap was inflated because Aaron Rodgers won the event. So there's obviously some competitiveness there still.
I think I saw they actually called kind of BS on Aaron Rodgers' handicap this year, and they changed it for the tournament.
Ooh,
they did. Yeah, they changed Tom's too, I think.
Ooh,
did they?
Yeah.
You don't mess with Keith.
Not because Tom's a good golfer, just because Rodgers got changed and he was like, well, I changed mine too then?
Yeah, probably. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom would never do anything nefarious, especially when it comes to competition or compromising that.
No, not at all. He can't deflate the golf ball. I know that.
That's another reason why golf is so unique, other than maybe like poker back in the early 2000s. Like, what's another game where you can literally go apply your skills and play in the same place as the guys that you watch on TV? I can't go into Madison Square Garden and play against, like, you know, like Carmelo Anthony when he's on the Knicks. You know what I mean? It's just, it's wild to think you can do that.
Yeah, it is a really special part of our sport, which we talked about in the last episode, right? Same ball, same equipment, same golf course. Yeah. You get to experience that. And if you could do it, you know, while you're in the same group, I mean, that's unparalleled. But I've often said I'd like to run a 30-yard out and have Josh Allen whiz it to me just so I could see what it felt like. What do you think would happen? Would I break my nose?
I think you'd drop it, for sure.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I do too. Yeah.
Do you pull or tear anything before the ball even comes out of the...
Of course not.
I don't know. Your history.
Well, gentlemen, I've never been to Pebble Beach, but I've been to Orange Lake Golf and Resort, and it's a very special place to me and to a lot of people too. John, Bryce, Orange Lake continues to innovate, which also means spending money, but doing it in the right places, staying ahead of trends in technology and provide efficient and excellent customer service and experience. And that is not something that I'm saying because I enjoy being there. It's something that I hear people say all the time. But we recently got to go be on property and you guys played around. We'll talk about that. But what was fascinating to me as the content creator for the company, we have these new Husqvarna robotic mowers, and it sounds like something that, you know, guys who are our age wouldn't necessarily be super excited about. We're not the most handy guys, us three. I don't mean to break the internet with that news, but I found these things fascinating. And what I also found fascinating about them is they're not there to replace any human workload or take anyone's jobs. They're there to make the grounds crew's job and the maintenance team's job more efficient so they can focus their energy on other places, cut down a little bit on the manual labor, not have to be up at all hours of the day, which they are anyway, but mowing and doing all the meticulous work they do. So I found these things fascinating. Can we speak a little bit about Orange Lake continuing to innovate and trying to stay ahead of the curve with technology, both on the golf course and off the golf course too, with things like Top Tracer?
So we actually installed 15 of these autonomous robotic mowers. Right now they're mowing the fairways and roughs of our par 3 course, which I believe we're the only public golf course in Florida right now using these mowers for fairway and rough. 10 of them are powered by electricity, so they go to the unit, they charge every night. 5 are actually powered by solar, which is really cool. You know, green energy and focusing on maybe a different way to use our resources. So we got 15 of these mowers. My worry was, you know, are they going to provide a quality cut? And they have, and we're excited about the future of them. So yeah, if you're out at Orange Lake, you're on the par 3 course Legends Walk, you're playing a little night golf, you might see our robotic mowers kind of scaling the grounds there. But a neat, innovative technology that we've brought to that golf course, and something that we are seeing a real pathway forward at our other facilities as well.
Bryce, did you get a chance to see these things in action at all?
I have not, just in your videos. But you know, I was a little, I don't want to say skeptical, but I think, you know, if you look at the history of like technology and golf, it's always taken a little bit of time, whether it was lithium batteries and golf cars or,
yep.
So I was thinking maybe we were a little ahead of the curve on that, but from just the feedback and from the videos I've seen, they look amazing. So that's exciting.
We've definitely been ahead sometimes where it hasn't worked out, but I think this is working out. So
yeah. Good.
All right. So gentlemen, I got to know there's it's sweeping the nation and quite possibly the universe. What exactly is pickleball? And why is it invading and infiltrating our golf world, a world that I'm just now learning and getting my sea legs under? Now I got pickleball to worry about. So what is pickleball and why is it invading our golf communities, our PGA shows? What is this game? Do we know anything about it?
I don't know a ton. I know it's the fastest growing sport in America. It looks to me to be a mix of tennis and table tennis, pickleball,
yeah.
I would say. I think it's, you know, it seems like it's great exercise, and maybe not too rigorous for, you know, people of all ages, which I think is similar to golf. So there's some parallel there, which is cool. I have not played it, but I'll tell you, I'd like to play it.
I have not played it either, but we have invested in it. You know, we've invested in pickleball courts, at our golf courses. It's definitely an amenity that folks are looking for. At the PGA show, there was two or three pickleball courts right beside each other in the middle of the showroom floor.
Full size.
And that's not a cheap weekend for those folks, you know? So there's obviously definitely a business model. I do laugh. Greg Nathan, who's the president of the National Golf Foundation, always jokes around. He's a big pickleball player that pickleball players tell him how many pickleball players are out there, and it's always 4 times more than what are actually out there. But I do think it is one of the fastest growing for sure. But you know, there's still more golfers, but it's a sport that we'll continue to invest in. I think that's ultimately what it is. It's like being outside, being healthy, moving, active, burning calories, the social component. There's a lot of inroads into what the same reasons people love golf, right? Yeah. So it's a sport we'll continue to invest in.
All right, gentlemen, we talked about the LIV earlier, but let's look ahead, as you know, you guys are always looking ahead to innovate in your careers. One decade from today, will the PGA or will the LIV be more popular, more profitable, and more viable? It could be a mixture, but...
Popular, profitable, and viable.
I think LIV is just going to be a limited tournament series that will still exist in 10 years. I think the PGA Tour will always be the true competitive driver in the game of professional golf, at least in North America. That's kind of the way I see it always being.
I agree. I think the feeder system from PGA Tour University, which is the college, you know, arm of golf, feeding into the PGA Tour is going to create that natural inroad of talent into the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour will be more profitable in my mind, right? Popular, I think they're both going to be popular. I do think there's room for both. I do think both will exist. I think there is a strong contingent of some golfers wanting that team environment and then some golfers wanting to play less golf, right? Yeah. And who can blame them? I mean, if you're on the road 36 weeks a year and you've got two small kids at your house, then someone knocking on your door with an opportunity to play in the LIV series probably makes a lot of sense, right? So I think they'll both be here.
Yeah.
What is the single greatest golf movie of all time? There has to be at least golf elements and some sort of golf theme. It can be a comedy, it can be a drama, it could be anything involving golf, but it has to take up a significant portion.
My personal favorite is 10 Cup. To me, I like Kevin Costner, and it's funny, and there's a little bit of romance in it too, I guess. I find it a very entertaining movie. I like Happy Gilmore as well, but it's more of a kind of unrealistic comedy, I would say. 10 Cup has the comedy effect, but then also some somewhat realistic golf subject matter as well.
I'd put 10 Cup above, like, The Legend of Bagger Vance. That one was kind of a stinker to me. Not a fan of Happy Gilmore. Too goofy for me. Like 10 Cup, entertaining. But I'm going to tilt more a little bit, probably to a unique one, The Greatest Game Ever Played. You know, that's based on a true story of a 9-year-old who came out of nowhere to win the U.S. Open in the early 1900s. And it's just like golf nostalgia and history. And I just, you know, I really liked it. So I'm going Greatest Game Ever Played off the top of my head. I'm calling Jordan out. He said Caddyshack, he doesn't really like it. He thinks it's overrated. I disagree. I think Caddyshack's still a nice watch. And it's got some good inroads, especially if you grew up around that private country club world. Whenever I was a child and my dad was a head golf professional, you know, you'd see these members acting like that. So I still think Caddyshack's a great flick. But I'm going The Greatest Game Ever Played. Pulled that one out. You weren't thinking that one, were you?
I wasn't. I've seen it, and I think you're showing your age again. But
man, this whole thing, I've been showing my age.
All right, gentlemen, excellent job. As always, it is time for the lip out. You both get 30 seconds to say whatever you want. Could be golf-related, could be unrelated. Whatever you want, the floor is yours. Youth will be served, so we'll go with Bryce today to lead us off.
Yes, just following off up with the PGA show, exciting week, and I'm really encouraged by the conversations that I'm having with golf course operators. I think they're really starting to embrace technology and how technology and software can help drive their business, which for me, you know, our goal at Golf Back is number one is to help golf course operators improve their business. So really exciting for me to see, and I've been at this for a long time, and I think we're making as much headway as we've ever made, so it's exciting.
Yeah, I would say my takeaway from the PGA show is there's still a pretty big void in the golf simulator booking engine space, right? A lot of questions being asked to us at Golf Back and just conversations in general about, you know, what kind of reservation systems exist in simulator technology. And I know TrackMan has one that they purchased, but that's kind of a European commercially tilted platform that they're continuing to mold. But there's some challenges, I think, out there with an easy to use online simulator booking engine that could be used for, you know, one, two, or three bays. So It's definitely something we're going to explore at Golf Back, but that's a void and a need, and that came out pretty loudly to me at the PGA Show.
I agree. Yeah.
Awesome job, guys. Greatly appreciate your time and expertise, as always. I got to say, guys, got to be honest, I think at worst, this is at least our second best episode ever. I know we've only done two, but it's pretty good. Gentlemen, Bryce, John Brown, thank you for your time. Greatly appreciate it. Join us next week. You can subscribe on YouTube and, of course, all major podcasting platforms. It's the 2 to T podcast. For Bryce Voisin and John Brown, I'm Jordan Colson. Thank you, guys.
2 to T we go.
Yep.